Nice jacket, Kevin.
The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello and welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Friday, July 6th, and this is episode number 85. I am Bob Hayes, your host, here with you as I am every week, bringing you the best in motorcycle road racing, reporting, news, commentary, and all kinds of good stuff. Got another big show today. Jules and I did a big long call talking about Assen. I thought it came out really, really good. And then because Assen was broadcast on CBS and I had such a great response to my last episode, number 82, where we talked about CBS's coverage at Catalunya, I decided to go ahead and do it again. So we talk a little bit about how CBS, their coverage of Assen, some of the things that I thought that they did right, some of the things I thought they did wrong. And there might be a little surprise of another Pepsi challenge there. So we're going to do that. Before we get to that, we do have a couple of little news items, some interesting stuff coming up. First thing is that Miguel Duhamel is supposedly going to be riding for Tony Elias while in what Tony Elias is recovering from his broken leg that he got in free practice one there at Assen. Fractured femur. Apparently it was a spiral fracture of the femur. Initial reports were that Tony Elias was going to be missing possibly the rest of the season or maybe 3 months, which would, you know, allow him to race like the last three or four races this season, that sort of thing. Lately, they've been saying that he might be back for Brno. I'd be a little surprised if he can recover from that in only about 6 weeks' time, but we'll have to see, and we wish him luck and a very positive outlook, hopefully, for him. But with Miguel Duhamel possibly tapped to ride at the USGP, that should make things really super interesting because Duhamel has ridden in MotoGP before, but it was like 1992. I mean, he spent his entire career pretty much, well, at least for the last, since 1990 or so, the last 17 years, in AMA. He's won 8 titles, one in Superbike, 5 in Super Sport, and 2 in Formula Extreme, and he's won the Daytona 200 5 times. So Duhamel's quite a rider. He's getting a little long in the tooth. He's about 39. But if he picked up that ride on Elias's Honda Gresini machine, I think it might be super interesting because he knows Laguna Seca well. He's raced there many, many times. He's got that home field advantage, and that could be some good stuff. Now, Gresini hasn't been forthcoming yet if they're going to actually have a rider for Elias at the Sachsenring. But it's a possibility that Michele Fabrizio, who rode for WCM a couple years ago and now is riding Honda in World Superbike, might possibly take his spot. So we're going to wait to see on that one. I'll have more details next week during our Sachsenring pre-race show whether or not we'll see Fabrizio out there. I'm sure that Gresini's going to find somebody or other. I can't imagine them leaving the seat unfilled. There's so many people that would want to ride in MotoGP that, you know, would probably basically do it for free. So they'll find somebody or other. Then other news type things that we have, not so much news, but more maybe announcements. A friend of mine from the podcast community is Emil Borquin. He works at TNC New Media. They do the podcast and New Media Expo, and they also do a show called The Podcast Brothers, which is somewhat about sort of the business of podcasting and new media and how you can go about things you can do to protect yourself for insurance and legal things and attracting advertisers and how to get you a wider audience and all sorts of things. It's a really good show if you actually do a podcast. And so if you are interested in anything like that, I encourage you to check that show out. It's called The Podcast Brothers. But that's not what I'm talking about here right now. What I'm mainly talking about is that Emil, unfortunately, is not going to be making it to this year's Laguna Seca. And he already has his tickets. So he sent me an email. He says, I'm contacting you because I have some Laguna Seca MotoGP flag room tickets that I won't be able to use this year. This would have been my third year at the GP, but I will be going on a last-minute family vacation. I was wondering if you or anyone you know would be interested in them. The face value for the two tickets is $756 total. and I would be willing to part with them for that amount. I'm sure you're familiar with the flagroom setup, but I'll detail it here in case you want to send it on to someone else. Their flagroom tickets are currently sold out, and it includes general admission to the Laguna Seca Trek for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, July 20th through the 22nd of 2007. A one-car parking pass in Section Blue 2, which can be seen on the track map, and there's a URL which I'll post on the website. Covered seating under a tent to the east of the grandstands between turn 4 and 5. They kind of set up their own special sort of flag room, and it's kind of a tent with seats in it and everything. Pretty cool. Grandstand seat ticket, turn 4, section B, which in the past has been right across from the big screen TV that's showing the live speed TV coverage of qualifying and the races. And yes, this is true. I actually had a seat in turn 4, section B in 2005. It was great. It was like a perfect view of, you know, I had a great view of the track and a great view of the big old jumbotron, so you could kind of see what's going on when you couldn't see them. When you were sitting in your grandstand seat. You also get a paddock pass and breakfast and lunch on Saturday and Sunday. The food has been pretty good the last 2 years. Yes, it has. Wine, beer, soda, and water on Saturday and Sunday. You get portable bathrooms, which is a slight step up from the porta-potties for the general public that are for flagroom ticket holders only, and a souvenir program. So you get a pretty good package there, and to be clear, he says this includes two flagroom tickets with the tent seating, the grandstand seat, the paddock passes, the free wine, beer, soda, and water, and etc., and one parking pass. It's quite a good deal there, quite a big package, and he's willing to part with it at face value, which at this stage in the game, folks, is quite a deal. Those tickets are sold out, and if you check on eBay, I'm sure they're selling for a lot more than face value. So he says, if you know of anyone who'd be interested in them, let me know. Blah, blah, blah. I have all the tickets and parking pass in my possession. And of course, he'd like to talk to you. If there are no takers, he's going to put them on eBay on Tuesday, July 10th in the evening. So, you know, if you want to get a hold of him, I have his email address here. It's Emile with an E, E-M-I-L-E, Emile at tncnewmedia.com. That's Tango November Charlie, TNC. newmedia.com, all one word. And of course, I'm going to put a link to that on the MotoGPOdo.com website. Oh, Emil also says, I should have read this last paragraph, he also has a reservation at the Best Western Beach Resort in Monterey at 2600 Sand Dunes Drive, checking in July 20th and checking out July 22nd. Rooms are generally sold out long in advance, and yes, I'm sure they are. And they're very expensive. This two-night reservation would have cost him $610. He can't make any guarantees, but he can do his best to transfer this reservation if you're interested. It's not a requirement for buying the tickets. You don't have to have the room. If you'd like to talk about the room to him, he will talk to you about that as well. So if you're interested, if you have not got tickets for the USGP at Laguna Seca, or if you're looking to upgrade your current tickets or whatever, send Emil an email. He's a great guy. And basically, you know, he's giving us MotoGPOD listeners a sort of a chance to get a better deal on these tickets than you will next week. Because once he puts those on eBay, they're going to go for more than face value. So you could get yourself two flagroom tickets for he's got $756. And then if you want to work out something on the motel sort of a thing, like he said, he can't even make any guarantees on that for sure, but he might be able to transfer it. And you could talk to him about that. So it's Emil at tncnewmedia.com. Emil with an E. And the next little announcement I have, oh, this is something I've been meaning to mention for so long, and I keep forgetting because it keeps dropping out of my notes for one reason or another, but Jules and Jim and Heidi over there at Ride On 2 made this Google Calendar that covers the entire schedule of MotoGP racing this year, and it's very complete, and they're constantly tweaking it and adding it, so it's really great. Google Calendar that'll tell you all the times of when practice starts, when the races are, etc., etc., etc. I'm going to put a link on it because the link is just ridiculous. I'm not going to try and read it. But if you can search on Google for the MotoGP Google Calendar, you'll probably find it. And if all else fails, go to MotoGPOD.com and find the link and check this calendar out. It's pretty cool. And you can subscribe to it so that it's updated or whatever in your My Google thing. And it's really pretty cool stuff. And let's see what else we got going on. Oh, one other thing that we had mentioned, and this is from our buddy Steve Jones, who is doing quite a few things with MotoGP. And one of the things he's done is he's got the Nicky Hayden fan club kind of going on there at the Nicky Hayden fan suite is at Laguna Seca. And he issued a press release here which I'll just read rather than trying to make this up because I'm flubbing it. So, Nikki Hayden fan banner charity auction. The proceeds are to prevent racing injuries and benefit injured racers. A custom one-of-a-kind banner celebrating Nikki Hayden's world championship will hang from the Nikki Hayden fan suite overlooking pit row at the 2007 Red Bull USGP MotoGP event at Laguna Seca. It will be signed by MotoGP world champion Nikki Hayden, and it will be auctioned on eBay to benefit rider safety and injured rider assistance. Auction proceeds go to the Road Racing World Action Fund, which promotes motorcycle racing safety and advocates and promotes the use of soft barriers to prevent racetrack injuries. And yes, this is a good thing with a capital G, folks. The Road Racing World Action Fund has put air fence on a lot of racetracks, and this primarily affects AMA riders because those are the tracks they're putting it at. But this is good stuff. It really is. And more of this air fence is needed to get rid of the concrete Armco and whatnot else that they have on some of these circuits. So the Action Fund is a good thing. And it also supports the Red Flag Fund, which provides financial support and assistance to road racers throughout the United States who are seriously injured during competition. Both of these are 501c3 organizations, blah, blah, blah. The winning bid will be fully tax deductible. The 18-foot by 3-foot banner is handmade by Connecticut artist Jeff Lane, will be unveiled on the Nikki Hayden fan suite at 9:55 a.m. on Friday morning, July 20th, just prior to MotoGP pre-practice number one. A 12-foot by 3-foot example of Lane's previous work, which was the 2006 banner, can be found at usmotogpfans.com. sweetbanner.jpg. So if you go to usmotogpfans.com, you'll probably find some interesting stuff up there about Steve Jones's organization that he's got going on and the Nikki Hayden fan suite. And this auction, which the charity auction on eBay, will start on Thursday, July 19th. So we got plenty of notice here, folks. Almost 2 weeks away. Bidders can go to eBay anytime after 7 p.m. on Thursday, July 19th and search for Nikki Hayden banner. And once that does happen, I will put a link on the website, although Thursday, July 19th, I'll actually be down there myself at Laguna Seca, so chances are definitely I'm not going to have internet access to be updating my website to add links. But when I get back from the USGP, if the auction has not ended, I will put a link up then. And in any event, this is a good organization. It's for a good cause. And if you like souvenirs and stuff like that with Nikki Hayden, I would definitely consider doing that. One of the things that we're doing, like I said today, is a big long call that I did with Jules about Assen, which was another spectacular race. We're just having this fantastic season, 9 races so far this season. We're done with half the races this year, and they've all been really, really good. Some have been better than others, but none of them have been boring or anything like that. I mean, not that MotoGP is really ever boring, but it does occasionally have its ups and downs where some races are better than others. And I think that this year they've all been above average. I've just been really, really excited. And you know, it's been 11 races now. After Assen, 11 races that we have not had a winner from the pole position. It's the longest in the Premier class history. And also Honda has gone winless for, I believe this is the longest stretch that they've had no wins as well. They managed to get somebody on the box there at Assen, which is good, but they've had not the best of seasons so far either. And it was kind of interesting because at Assen, I'm somewhat spoiling mine and Jules' Assen wrap-up here, but basically we had for the winners was Rossi, or on the podium, excuse me, was Rossi, Stoner, and Hayden. And Jules' wife made a comment that you had the former champion, the current champion, and the future champion all on the box at the same time. And I think she's really correct there that we're going to see Stoner. He's going to be picking up a championship. He may not do it this year, but it will happen soon. I don't want to go out on a crazy limb or anything and say, you know, he's not the next Rossi, so I'm not going to say that, but or that he's even the next next super best thing, but he sure is having a hell of a season. He didn't, you know, his last year he showed a lot of promise, but he also showed a lot of crashes, and he just didn't quite seem to mesh too well. I mean, he was on the LCR team, which is somewhat of a handicap because he did, you know, he did really well in 250s, but then when he came out to the LCRs, it was, so much. But this move to Ducati has just suited him so well, and he's doing just fantastic, and it's making for some good racing for us to watch, a championship that we are going to remember. You know, you're going to say in a couple of years that, boy, that 2007 season was really a good one, because it has been. It's just been super stuff. So, enough with chattering on. Why don't we talk a little bit about the latest event in the 2007 season, which was Assen. And why don't we go to me and Jules having a conversation about it, and we'll have our wrap up. MotoGP OD listeners, I have a small favor to ask of you. This show costs money to produce. I have bandwidth and hosting bills to pay, domain name registrations, phone bills, and a variety of other expenses. A Skype bill alone is getting a little scary, with calls to Liam running me somewhere around 30 cents a minute right now, what with a dollar's free fall plunge against the euro, which is how I have to buy Skype credits. I haven't been finding any advertisers since I got back from Iraq, haven't even been particularly looking for them, since I really don't want the show to become too commercial in any case. So, seeing as MotoGP OD is the national public radio of motorcycle road racing, much like NPR, I am asking you that if you enjoy the show, if you like what you hear, please consider making a small donation to the cause. There's a link on the left side of MotoGPOD.com. It's quick and painless through PayPal, and every little bit will help me make the show that much better and keep it going on a regular schedule. Because without listeners like you, there wouldn't be a MotoGP OD. Hi, Jules. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good, Bob.
Good. It's nice talking to you. It's been a little while. Yeah, doing great. I guess you were in Tahoe when you watched the race, but you did get a chance to watch it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, cool. So, well, we're here to talk about it, so why don't we talk about it? And like we always do, why don't we basically go down the grid, and if anything that sticks out in your mind about qualifying, because what was the reason? I didn't get a chance to watch qualifying. Oh, because it was on Friday and stuff, and podcast Thursday night and all that, and I didn't even go to bed till 2 o'clock, so I wasn't about to get up at 4:30 to watch qualifying. So I didn't get to see qualifying for it. I only read the results.
I had to tell you, but I didn't see it either, so...
Oh, well, maybe, you know, whatever. Between the two of us, we'll figure something out.
Right.
Going down the grid. First row, we had Chris Vermeulen got the pole.
Because it was raining.
Yes. He's somewhat turning into a rain specialist, isn't he? And it seems kind of strange because all of our Australians are somewhat getting that kind of, wow, they're good in the rain reputation. Do you agree?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Anthony West, second time out. Seventh on the grid.
Yeah, he's doing well. But so carrying on down there, we had Chris Vermeulen on pole, Casey Stoner on the Ducati, just behind him, only not even, well, 2/10, not quite 2/10 behind him, two 100ths, I mean, of a second behind him. So it was a very close qualifying session there. Got to get my decimals right here. And third place, Randy Dupuis on the Kawasaki, riding quite well. And second row, Marco Melandri, John Hopkins on the other Suzuki, and Colin Edwards beating out Rossi for a qualifying position.
Yeah.
Third row, Anthony West, just possibly Nick Harris's favorite rider. And Alex Hoffman on the Bremec Dantin Ducati, and Danny Pedrosa on the factory Repsol Honda in ninth on the grid there, rounding out row three. Then row four, Loris Caparossi, 10th on the grid. Another somewhat uninspiring qualifying position from Loris. He's not having the best of seasons there, is he? Followed by Valentino Rossi in 11th, which, talk about uninspiring. You know any details on that, why he did not do all that well on qualifying? Or
bad pick of tire, possibly? I don't know. Unfortunately, I didn't even read the report, but I know that he said... After the race was over and everything, the pressure was off, he said that he could not sleep that night knowing that he was going to be starting from 11th place because he was so stressed out, which sure. Means, you know, it's the stress is getting to the guy. He's definitely in a totally new fight for him. It's not a fight where he's fighting the bike or the setup and he's fighting a great rider.
Right, yeah. It is kind of somewhat of a different place for him, too. So, 12th place on the grid, Alex Barros on the other Pramac Dantin. And 13th, first bike on the fifth row, Nicky Hayden.
Terrible.
Champion on the Repsol Honda. And kind of odd that he did so relatively poorly in qualifying, seeing as he finally seems to have come to grips with the bike. You know, they've made changes, and it's suiting him. He's doing quite well with the bike this past couple of weeks since the Catalunya tests.
Yep. But you know, this season is really starting to make me realize that, like, I just think that rain races are kind of like useless as far as defining who's a better rider or whatever. I don't even think it's about courage. I think it's just about a different kind of skill. There should be a rain series and a dry series, you know? they're so different.
Yeah, it gives a totally different group of riders a chance to, you know, to excel, to be up front, to be on the podium and all of that. I mean, it is the great equalizer, but also to an extent it's the great imbalancerizer, because you get a topsy-turvy effect. Next to him in spot number 14, middle of the fifth row, Curtis Roberts, putting in a really good performance there on the KR 212. It's good to see them not last.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of cool.
Most importantly, only about 2.7 seconds off the pole, so that's pretty good for them.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, when it
was raining, so.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, but when you look at it that way, it's still, they're way down there. But, you know, then he's followed, like I said, by Shinya Nakano, riding a Honda, the Konica Minolta Honda, and just, you know, way down there. Carlos Checa on row 6 in spot number 16, followed by Sylvain Guntoli on the Tech 3 Yamaha, and rounding out the grid in spot number 18, Makoto Tomita. Notice there's only 18 riders, not 19, because Tony Elias had a nasty, nasty crash in first free practice, like we talked a little bit about last week. And did you see the replay of that?
Yeah, and you know what? It was amazing, because you're watching the replay and you're like, well, this doesn't look like a bad crash, until you watch closely what happens to his leg as he's rolling. He does a roll at the very end, so he's almost stopped, and he does this little roll, and the leg gets under him in a really bad way. And you can, there was a lot of like talk on various forums that he had spinal cord damage, and that's why it was going to take so long for the recovery. But I think it was an instance of like the telephone game, you know, where like one person says something to another. I think he had a spiral fracture, and somebody said spiral fracture, and then somebody else heard spinal fracture, and it turned into a spinal. There's nothing in Clinica Mobile website about anything to do with his spine. It's just a really, really bad break. A piece of bone got detached, so that's about as bad as it gets, you know.
Yeah, it's a femur break is bad enough. A spiral break is bad. And I mean, you could see his leg flopping around when he rolled. It was like, horrible. Ugh, you know, so I mean, it had to be brutally painful. Yeah. And did you read the story about how he tried to put his leg back in place when he was laying there in the gravel trap?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, ouch, man.
Yeah. So, I think like your little brain takes over then, like your primitive brain just takes over and like,
oh, sure.
Well, this shouldn't be like this. I think I need to. You know, like I remember once I broke my wrist and it was like in an L shape, and I immediately tried to straighten it out, which is not the right thing to do, because I almost passed out from the pain.
A real eye opener, so to speak.
Yeah. An interesting thing about Tomita was that he was actually outside of the qualifying again. The rules say he has to be within, what, 107%?
107%, right.
He was outside of that, but they let him race again, I guess because of the wet.
And that was also the case at Donington? No, not Donington.
At Le Mans.
Le Mans, yeah.
Yep.
And I keep thinking the Donington qualifying was actually dry. But
right.
So moving on, let's talk about that start. I know basically the lights went out and Stoner didn't get a very good start at all. Yeah.
What?
If I recall.
Stoner was like a rocket.
Stoner got a rocket off the start. I'm sorry. Wrong race. Races are too close together.
No. Yeah. He did great. He looked like he was, you know, an eighth of a lap ahead by the second corner, followed by Hopper. And then it was Rossi who got a shitty start.
Exactly.
I mean, he started from 11th and was basically in 11th for a while, and then moved up to 10th and got repassed and was 11th. And that first lap was, the guy who got a really amazing start, though, was, of course, Nicky Hayden. He went around the outside. He beautiful move. Very smart. And he slotted into fourth, I believe.
He was in
13th, and he slotted into fourth, which is pretty insane by the first corner.
Yeah, exactly. And he ended up, he was a super, he just came up the outside. I mean, it was almost like you thought he had a jump start. Like I say, Honda has definitely been doing something because he was basically just zoom. He got a fantastic start, and he had no problem picking up those spots, and it was really impressive to watch.
Yeah, it was amazing. Mm-hmm. The replay that they showed later on, because you know, at the start I was like watching the front row and whatever, and then you see his bike coming around the outside, and you're like, oh my god, wasn't he like down like 13th? And then they show the replay, very very just a smart. I mean, he got a great start, and then he took advantage of it. Because a lot of times you get a good start, but you're in a position where you have to hit the brakes early, or you punch somebody off the track. So anyway, good on him. That was great.
Yeah, no, it was. It was awesome. He, like I said, he did real well, and he was coming up the outside, too.
Yep.
So basically, things started shaking up from there. At the end of the first lap, we had... Well, you know, Rossi was down in ninth. I mean, it took him a while to start progressing up.
Yep.
Looking at my lap chart here. Unfortunately, I don't have a lot of notes about the race. And again, you know, I don't have that, oh, this happened on that lap sort of memory. You know, I just sort of, the race is something of a blur. So, but Stoner, again, just doing fantastically well, leading, officially speaking, on the lap chart here, leading so many laps, just led lap after lap. The guy, if you know, they don't give out points in MotoGP for who leads the most laps or anything like that, and it tends to get somewhat unnoticed. But if they did, it would be amazing. A guy would just, you know.
Well, if they did, Seth Gibran would have had two. He would have been champion twice.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah, that too. Because what counts though is who crosses the finish line first.
Yep.
And But quite a good race. The continuing
Hopper
down.
Hopper did a good job on that, holding on to that second spot forever, too. I think he went about half distance. No, not quite half distance in second.
He did. He did a super good job on that. And basically what ended up was Rossi ended up catching up to him. So within, you know, about half the race distance, Rossi had worked his way up from 11th on the grid to second spot. He ended lap 12 in second spot. And that was also it was fun to watch. You're watching the doctor at work again of just, you know, all the classic sort of Rossi things, the stalking his prey type of a race. And you just, you know, you see it and, it was just great.
He did a lot of passing in the same spot, in the S's, and he did, what I found interesting was that, I think there was only one rider until Stoner who was able to do any repassing, and that was Hopper. In other words, once he passed somebody, that was it. He just left him behind, and then he finally got to Hopper. Hopper gave him a little bit of a fight, but not much. And at that point was when it was when Rossi took third from Hayden that. I believe. Let's see. Let me pull up the lap chart. Yeah, on the eighth lap, he. That's when he was no longer held up by anybody, and his lap time turned out to be like a second faster than Stoner. It was not quite a second faster at first. It was like two tenths, then like 5 tenths, and 8 tenths. But basically, like creeping towards the 1 second per lap quicker, which is. You know, pretty amazing in a dry race.
Oh yeah, it was. Because I'm looking again. Also, same thing. The analysis by lap, and yeah, you're just seeing these you know, fairly sizable differences. He was zooming along, comparatively speaking, and closed that gap to Stoner and caught up, and the gap that Hopper had somewhat allowed to open up. And initially, that whole race looked a bit like it was going to be a runaway. I remember we were chatting on IRC, and you know, we said, oh wow, well, you know, there goes Stoner. I think she remembers thinking that. I'm not sure if I typed it, but
you did because I remember my wife said, don't wake me up this time, because I think whenever I'm watching Rossi loses. so then like when Rossi actually caught up with him is when I remember I was like, okay, I gotta run off and wake her up because she's gonna want to see this. Anyway, yeah, so it did look like a runaway, but you know, this is a track where Rossi started like, I don't know, 14th or 15th last year, and with a broken wrist and still managed to move up to 8th. He knows this track really well. It is a writer's track, even after the changes. And some of these guys, I mean, again, just like in Mugello, Rossi's line was vastly different. I think he has some things figured out that others have not figured out yet, and he made good use of it. And he made good use of the Yamaha, especially on the brakes.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very fast track, Assen. It's not like it has any super fast straights, but there's a lot of sections where you're going very fast and you're slowing down into a little chicane and then speeding up again. And there's fast corners, and so it's, you know, it's a place where that advantage the brakes were a big advantage for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and yeah, exactly. Fast flowing track. It's a rider's track. It's fun to watch a race at these kind of tracks where it's more of the classic. I mean, well, it was, you know, these were roads at one time.
Right.
And, you know, it's not more of a, less a cookie cutter Formula One where everybody's, you know, miles away from the track sort of a track. And, that's one reason why we all enjoy it and why so many riders do well there. You know, this is, oh, I like this track because this is where I had my highest position. I mean, so many people have said that of the riders. Coming to mind was Guintoli. There was on MotoGP.com, they had him doing the lap analysis, and that was one thing he said. He said, I've always liked Assen because it's where I got my best positions in 250, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And despite Casey Soner saying that Rossi says that every track is his favorite track, I think he does have
Actually, Rossi's very, very adamant about saying there's certain, he does not like certain tracks. He says he does not like Turkey, for example.
Right. Right.
He said he's not too crazy about Qatar. I don't know what he said about China, but so far we haven't even hit his favorite tracks yet, really. Well, sorry, Mugello,
Donington,
Catalunya. He does say he likes Catalunya, but he hasn't had the best of luck there in the last 2 years. So,
no, it might be a crowd thing as much as anything too in Catalunya. You know, despite the fact it's in Spain, it's you know, it's just a. The whole crowd or atmosphere.
Yep.
I'd love to go to a race in Catalunya or Jerez.
Especially that race.
Oh, yeah.
That particular race would have been great.
Yes. We are digressing, but that's okay because it's still kind of interesting. And basically, though, let's see. So, like I said, by the end of lap 12, Rossi's up in second position and stalked Stoner for the next 10 laps.
Well, it took him another two laps before he actually was on Stoner's
close
rear
enough
wheel,
exactly
like 14th exactly. lap. But from that point on, it was something I thought this was really the defining moment for Stoner. Even though he did not win this race, this was the defining moment because I don't remember who said this on the Right On 2 forums, but I thought it was extremely astute. This was no longer Rossi playing a psychological game. Whoever it is that said it, sorry, I forgot. But anyway, that Rossi's no longer playing these psychological games that he used to play with Biaggi and Gibernau. He knows that Stoner is not going to fall for this, I mean, that he doesn't break this way. So he was really just riding his heart out, and Stoner was doing this incredible job of just blocking, outsmarting Rossi, knowing where Rossi was going to attack. Which is very hard to do when the guy's behind you. It's easy, much easier when you're behind the guy and tracking him lap after lap and figuring out where the weaknesses are, right? So he did a fantastic job because I actually think that Stoner's pace was just not. He was never going to beat Rossi on pace alone. He was just going to. The only chance he had was to be able to somehow hold him off.
Right.
And he did an incredible job for lap. I mean, I would say for about eight laps there, it was pure. Skill that kept him ahead of Rossi.
I agree, and I read those posts on Ride On 2 as well, and participated a little bit in the discussion. I don't think that the mind games are going to go away. To be honest with you,
no, they're not going to go away. But Rossi was not passing Stoner because he couldn't, because he didn't want to. I mean, because he wanted to like pressure him into making a mistake. He was not passing him because he couldn't.
Yeah. Gotcha. I got you covered. Exactly. And when you used to watch the battles with Giovinazzi and Biaggi, there would be times when it was, you know, Rossi would let them pass and you know, toying them. It was like watching a cat play with a mouse.
And then there's also an evil theory. You could say that it would be worth a lot more to Rossi to really freak out the guy he's taunting and then have them do something stupid and lose a couple positions or crash or whatever, because then that's worth a lot more points than the 5 points he gets from just beating him. So this was a very fair race. I think they both just rode their best that they could, and once Russ Rossi passed Stoner, that he just pulled away. So he obviously had a better pace. So it was all about 8 laps of Stoner blocking Rossi in just a very intelligent way.
Right. And Seppo, the manager of the Ducati team, you know, said, you know, we can't win every race afterwards and stuff. So, and you know, I think they, you know, Stoner keeps saying, I'm not thinking about the championship yet. He must be, obviously. You know, he's just trying not to imprint. But he's doing so well. It's just, when you look at the numbers, though, one bad race, one crash, and that's gone.
Yep.
You know, he hasn't got that commanding lead, and he can't afford to take too many seconds compared to Rossi taking first.
Right.
In fact, 4 more. And
five.
Five, yes. Five. Five would put him past, because there was 21-point difference right now, right?
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. So basically, though, to kind of cut a long story short, we had a good race going. It wasn't quite the oh my god, edge of the seat, you know, knuckler that some of these races have been, but it was a fantastic race all the same. And on on the 23rd lap, Rossi made his pass on Stoner, and I'm going to talk about this a little bit later in the show again, more from back by popular demand, but it was one of those classic moments. And also it was one of those times where the director, whoever was the director at this particular race, a Dutch director or whoever the MotoGP, you know, they were showing all kinds of other stuff happening on the track. Oh, you know, here's Hayden, battling with, Pedrosa. Not Pedrosa. Who was he battling with
Pedrosa.
Pedrosa.
Yeah. And they're also showing, like the Barros, Hoffman, who else was in there?
Right.
And then Landry, you know, like, I mean, it was good stuff, but we knew that there was incredible stuff going up front, you know?
Exactly.
And we get a cut back. Oh, and there's Rossi. He's in front.
Right. Exactly. I mean, you got to see the pass, but it was like, they barely came back in time. Yeah. And I don't know if there's a small delay, like, you know, typically on a live, broadcast and stuff, there'll be a couple of second delay so that they have time to bleep out any swear words or anything.
Right.
You know, I wonder if there's a few second delay in the actual race broadcast so the director can, you know, unscrew up a, oh my God, we're on the wrong camera. I don't know. But, whatever, they came back just in time so that you could see, Rossi execute this beautiful pass on Stoner from a nice overhead shot. And, it was nicely done. And like you said, after that, Rossi just opened up a big, big gap on Stoner once he had that lead. And there was no issues of tire wear or anything like that, because you're looking at the lap progression and he was opening up, on lap 24 alone, he picked up almost 7/10 on him.
Yeah.
So... that's, it's pretty impressive that late in the race, that much difference. And some of it might have been Stoner being calculating and thinking, well, you know, better to just take the second, you know, but I don't know. I'm not sure if that was the case.
Stoner said that he did not lay off and that the bike had plenty of power left. And it left where he was riding at maximum. But I have a feeling that you're right that He knew he wasn't going to get it, so he probably was being careful. He knew that Nicky was not going to catch him, so...
Right.
Because at the very end, Rossi did slow down, because he started celebrating a couple of bends before. I don't think I've ever seen Rossi quite that happy. And he started celebrating a few corners from the end, And so there was definitely a few tenths of a second left lost there, and he still beat Stoner by about 2 seconds. So I'm guessing that he was probably leading by about 2.5 when he was at full pace.
Right, and he was when you saw some of the pictures which showed up on the Ride On 2 forums. In fact, did you see that one of him playing with Burgess?
Oh God, like, those
basically
two guys
chasing him around
both
on the podium.
So relieved.
Yeah, and you know, both of them, you could see, were like, you know, there's big smiles, everybody's happy, you know, and that's cool, and that's a fun thing to see of these guys are human, and to watch, you know, that, you know, after Donington, he didn't get the podium in Donington, and they showed him in the garage, and he, you know, he put on the smile for the camera and wave, yep.
and the little shrug with his shoulders that he does. You know?
Yeah, but I'm sure that as soon as, you know, he's off camera and everything, I know in my heart that the guy was just crushed.
Yeah,
but at not being on the podium in Donington, and so for him to come back and win Aston was probably a really nice, you know, consolation prize kind of a thing. And so basically, although we, you know, running down the race there, I don't think we're putting enough excitement into our report here. That what actually happened, but it was a super good race. But it did boil down to that last few laps. You know, there was a sort of in the middle bit where, you know, you're just watching this great race, but that last part where you see him pass, and it was just, oh my God. And, so I don't know about you. In fact, we were typing away on IRC, and there was a lag there where we're just, you know, riveted to the race. I know we didn't talk for quite a few laps, but, but then
glued to the
cool.
screen. It was, I remember we said,
say again,
I remember you typing, I'm glued to the screen right now.
Yes. Glued. So that was pretty cool stuff. So basically we ended up finishing up the race with Valentino Rossi taking number one, 25 more points there for his championship effort. Followed in second position by Casey Stoner. Third place, Nicky Hayden, which, you know, we haven't much talked about other than Nicky's fantastic Rocketman start. He rode a good race.
He rode a great race.
Yes.
And I wanted to actually say something about this. Aston is a very tricky track. It's a rider's track, like I said earlier. I remember reading somewhere that in 2003, McDuin sat down with Nicky Hayden, who was doing terrible at the track, and I think they walked around the track once or twice, and he basically gave him all his secrets. Apparently, that's the story that I read. And if you notice, Nicky always has had good results there. Last year he won. It was his first win outside of Laguna Seca. And you know, he's been finishing very regularly. Well, I think he crashed out once, but out of like second or third. So he gets this track. So I think this is one of his favorite tracks. He doesn't really say it, but I think it's one of his favorite tracks. And so that helped, but it's good to see I can't believe I'm saying this, but it's good to see that the Hondas were competitive.
Yes. Yeah, that is kind of an odd thing to say. And that reminds me of another long post in the Ride On 2 forums. And it's not like this podcast is a big commercial for Ride On 2, but it's been a good week there. And I finally had a chance to go to the forums too. That Honda's domination is ending. Do you remember that one?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was a good thread. But yeah, so, and again, also speaking of happy, Nicky Hayden was ecstatic. You know, he's back on the podium. The guy's had a terrible season, just, you know, mind-numbingly bad. And heartbreaking, and you know, for him to get a pick up a third place was you know, pretty sweet.
That's great.
And when you get a chance to watch that CBS coverage, he's got Schwantz did a quick little interview with him afterwards, and you know, it's pretty funny. So
cool, because of course we were listening to Anthony West.
Yes. You know, and actually, I think I stepped away to get a cup of coffee when Ant West was being interviewed, and I don't have quite the same. You know, I've never really, other than, like I say, you know, Nick Harris cannot, he just goes on and on about Ant West. you know, otherwise, you know, he's just, you know, he's been a rider. He's this guy in the 250 series, and then he moved to the 600s, you know. So I never had one way or the other sort of a big thing with Ant West when, you know, but I do know that he's got quite the reputation of being difficult, of being,
he sounds to me like an Australian, version of Who am I thinking of? 100. Come on. Help me out.
100? Bayless?
No. Mr. 100. Can't get a ride this year. Almost became a Ducati test rider. You're going to have to cut this part out. I can't believe I forgot his name. You know who I'm thinking of. The British
dude.
Yes, I do. God. Come on. Help me out here, somebody.
I'm dying. Who was that? God, I can't think of the name. Well, whatever.
Neil Hodgson. Jesus.
There you go, Hodgson.
And Jesus, I can't believe I forgot his name.
Hodgson, yeah.
Sorry, Neil.
When he took the world Superbike Championship in the 100 and all that was, you know, one and small 100. Yeah, to a point, I suppose. Or he's just like a typical, another Australian native, Gobert. You know, difficult.
Yeah,
but I haven't really seen that. Every time I've heard or seen the guy that I've been paying enough attention apparently to remember, he seems fine. And he's certainly, you know, he's been very gracious about the whole, at least in the quote machine press release stuff, you know, about the whole leaving Yamaha to go to Kawasaki and how great it is to be at Kawasaki and this and that. He's, you know, I don't know, maybe he's learning, but, and he certainly hasn't been doing too bad for a guy that just barely got on the bike. So, you know, well, I'm going to give him a chance personally.
Oh, yeah, no. I mean, I just don't want to have to listen to, I just don't want to have to listen to him every time because he's just not that interesting.
Right. Oh, yeah.
I would rather hear an interview with Nicky Hayden. There was no interview until the only interview we heard with Nicky Hayden was the one at the official interviews.
The official, right. And then on CBS, Schwantz did talk to him. But
well, that's what I'm saying.
MotoGP, no.
We're listening to some guy who finished ninth. I mean, you know, great. It's great, his second ride. It's an amazing finish, but I don't know. Anyway, it's enough about Ant West. We're giving him even more airtime.
One more thing about Ant West is, don't forget, is that, like I said, he's Nick Harris's, like, favorite guy. And the thing is up till recently, at least in the premier class, MotoGP class, Nicky Hayden seemed to be Nick Harris's favorite guy.
That's right.
He's been knocked off that pedestal. All right. Fourth spot went to Danny Pedrosa. It's quite a long distance back from Hayden and Rossi. He gapped, let's see, he was over 4 seconds behind Hayden. So basically Hayden at the end there was riding his own little race. And Pedrosa came in, followed by John Hopkins, picking up another fifth, which he seems to be specializing at. And
fifth and fourth.
Yep. Yeah. The guy's a great rider. He's got a lot of talent. This year they've got the machine mostly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's just, I don't know what's going on there. So
we'll see how he does on the Ducati. Next
Say again?
Year. We'll see how he does on the Ducati next year.
Oh, you think so, huh? Silly season is full swing, huh?
It'll be interesting.
Yes. Sixth spot, Colin Edwards, who we might be seeing on a World Superbike next year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But although, according to Colin, he's not riding in Superbike. Seventh,
he, by
Alex
the way,
Oops,
he, by the
say
way,
again?
On the grid, that was one of the most hilarious things ever. First of all, the whole, like, the Yamaha livery, was amazing, but the little picture of him with the pompadour haircut, I mean, it was, and then he had the Elvis hair and the Elvis glasses. I mean, I was laughing my ass off.
Yes, Edwards has a sense of humor apparently because he looked pretty ridiculous. Yep. But and the thing is, and I mentioned this one too, is, you know, the bike was fine. It was certainly bright. I mean, you had no problem seeing this motorcycle on the track because they did the livery, which if you haven't seen the race out there, you know, hopefully get a chance to go take a look at some of the pictures. They did a livery that was designed to tie in with the new Fiat 500. So sort of a retro thing. And it was a lot of pink and green and poodle skirts and go-go girls and kind of crap all over it. And, you know, the motorcycle, like I said, itself was bright and easy to pick out. The leathers were hideous. And I don't know what it was that bothered me so much. Cause you know, the leathers are the same color as the motorcycle, but it just seeing Colin and Rossi in these pink and green leathers
pastels
was just like, yuck. It just was, they were horrible. So hopefully we don't have to see that again.
Well, they did say they're going to do at least 4 different types of livery this year, so we've seen 2 so far.
Yeah. Yeah, so. I mean, normally I like the special liveries. I think it's fun. I think it's cool. The stuff that they ran at, it was, 2005 Laguna Seca with the yellow and black bumblebee-looking stuff. I love those colors. That was neat.
That was great. And,
yeah, so we'll have to see what the next one is. 7th spot in the winners or in the race classification, Alex Hoffman.
Who was a long way back behind Colin.
Yes.
21 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah.
So those first 6 guys were running a totally different pace.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so the first 6 up down to Colin Edwards, the first 6 were covered by 15.1 odd seconds. And then, Barros, you got 36 seconds behind Rossi, and Hoffman was 41 seconds behind Rossi. Yeah, the field had really spread out a lot.
Although those guys were pretty packed.
Yes, they did. Once we get down to this point of it, yeah, they're all battling for position to pick up the scraps. Because you're looking at coverage of only a few tenths. Because right behind Hoffman was Anthony West in 9th spot. Which, you know, to give the guy credit, it's not too bad for it's only his second outing on the bike. And, he still lost 2 places from his grid position, but he's could have been worse. Marco Melandri came in 10th on the Honda Grassini machine.
And he started off this race really well, but he had a very, very interesting mod on his bike. He's trying a different size tire.
Oh, really? I didn't hear that one.
Yeah, he was using a 16-inch rear wheel.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Actually, you did mention that. And, because he faded bad. And, because, the guy started off, 4th on the grid, and he held on to it
for a little bit.
Yeah. He wasn't doing too bad for a little bit, but he started fading off, and by 20th lap and everything, he's down and, getting in the pretty crappy numbers. So running a 16-inch rear, was he running a 16 and a half inch front or 16?
You asked me that during the IRC session. I was going to look it up and I completely forgot.
That's cool. Nobody mentioned it that I heard on any of the commentaries. So he probably was running a 16 and a half as a hunch, but, we should look that up. I'll make that my homework. All right. 11th spot, Carlos Checa, who did run a 16 inch front at Donington, at least. Him and Pedrosa were the only 2 guys that tried that. And I did not hear if they ran him again in Aston or not. But trying to give the guys more feel by going with a slightly smaller tire, 12th spot, Shinny Nakano. So he, actually improved his started off 15th and finished up 12th. Konica Minolta has always been considering they're on a Honda.
It's the black hole.
Yes.
I'm telling you, it's the black hole of talent.
Yeah.
It sucks all the talent out of the riders or something.
Yeah. Something's just not right at Konica Minolta land. And it makes you wonder a little bit what's going on. Makoto Tamada on the Yamaha, the giant handicap of the Dunlop tires, which still never ceases to puzzle me. I mean, a company that can do so well in superbike racing with their tires, Dunlop, and do so well in the 125s and the 250s can just get it so wrong every time in MotoGP. Yeah. It's not like they're not even trying. So it's, I don't know. It's kind of weird. Followed by Sylvain Guintoli on the other Dunlop shod Yamaha in 14th spot. And then Curtis Roberts picked up a point for Team KR. I do believe that was Team KR's first point. Was it not?
No, they had some points earlier on.
They're at 8 points for the season.
Yeah.
They picked up 3 points in England. So, which he rode a good race there.
But
he didn't see any of it because that race was so, intense of the upfront action and all
that. A lot of people did go out of that race.
Yes. That's true too. Help. So yeah, it tends to be a lot of points left on the table.
And notice the distance between him and Guintoli. I mean, we're talking like 30 seconds.
Oh, huge. Yeah. He was almost lapped. I mean, you figure, and then Vermeulen, and we didn't talk about that.
Vermeulen and Punier.
Right. Exactly. And they went down on lap, 12, eighth, lap 13, nine. Somewhere in the middle of the race time. and basically nine, we had DePunier coming up on the inside. You know, we're going back in the Wayback Machine, and we're going to talk about stuff in the race that we should have talked about 10 minutes ago. But they DePunier was coming up to make a pass on Vermeulen, and it was on lap
nine.
Christ, was it that far back?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, and you probably already said that, and I didn't hear it because I was babbling. But and basically, it was the kind of, you know, I mean, everybody can scourge.
It was slap. It was slap, dude. It was slap.
It was sloppy.
It was a slap. It was a slappy mistake, in my opinion.
Really? You think so?
I mean, you know, I can't. Who am I to say these guys are all, you know, superstars, but. To me, it looked like just slop. Like he wiggled the front, lost his line, and then went into Vermeulen.
Yeah. When I watched the replay, it's sort of he just, you know, he's coming on the inside, and they touched, and the next thing you know, and I mean, DePunier, that off looked bad.
Yeah.
It, you know, it looked like that was going to be another broken leg at least as well, but he. And Vermeulen ended up going off into the gravel. Did he actually drop the bike
and crash? He did, and he picked it up.
He did. So he dropped the bike.
Well, we never actually saw him down, but I know he was off the bike pushing it to get it started. To get it back on the...
Okay,
out of the gravel.
Right, which, I mean, that's got to be a bitch. That gravel's deep.
Yeah.
But whatever. So Vermeulen managed to get, you know, back out there and finish his race. Unfortunately, just out of the... Well... Yeah, actually, yeah, he was what, 6 seconds behind Roberts.
Yeah.
So, which he probably would have been able to. Let's take a quick look at the lap times. He probably would have been able to catch up to him pretty quick.
Yep.
Because he was running, he was running about the same lap times that Roberts was, if not a little bit slower towards the end of the race. So, yeah.
He may have had some broken bits.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, after a crash, anything is impressive, and I'm not detracting from Vermeulen or anything like that. If anything, I'm kind of making fun of Curtis Roberts, which is also not fair. But so he did finish the race, and, you know, had somebody else gone out or whatever, he would have picked up a point. But I always think I always kind of admire that when the riders go out, like Hayden did at Donington. And, you know, Hayden was hoping for points because it's a wet race. He was thinking, hey, guys are going to be going out. But just not quite enough guys did. But you see, every now and then you'll see a racer where they crash and they're done. You know, there's maybe a temper tantrum or something, but there's not even an effort. You know, you don't see that as much at the MotoGP level. But
I've never, ever, ever seen Gibernau try to pick up his bike and
start
again. There
you go. That's a classic example, actually.
Ever.
Yeah. And
he's going, you know, immediately to cry to his girlfriend or whatever.
And you'd always have the cutaway shot of the girlfriend.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
God. Said they crashed.
Let's say, wasn't that what your wife that picked up on that?
What's that? She was. It was my wife, yes.
That's great.
Said they crashed once, and she's like, now we're going to see the girlfriend.
Yeah. And there you enough, go.
There she is. That's one thing that I've never... You know, I always admire the guys that, you know, they pick it up and they go out there, like, you know, Rossi riding with the broken foot peg where he's like tucking his foot in the damn fairing or exhaust or wherever the hell he had it.
Yeah. Hayden's always like that. Vermeulen obviously has been doing that. I think Biaggi was, to me, the guy who just refused to, I mean, the bike could be in pieces and he's still trying to pick it up.
Yeah.
And calling to the stewards to come help him, and they're like, your wheel is missing, dude. You know?
Yeah.
You guys are definitely just would refuse to give up. Yeah, so there's a lot of... I think there's actually... Pedrosa is another guy who, like... Pedrosa has done restarts. And that's But he's more of a calculating restarter. I don't think he would restart if he was back in 16th.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, Barros like push starting the bike in China. I mean, that was insane.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that had to be. He was lucky to get it started. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the other retirement out of the race, not to change subject, but we are running out of time, was Lars Caparossi. And
I have not read anything about what happened.
What the hell happened? Yeah. I know. Same he thing. He just retired. Had a retirement. You know, the official line of MotoGP, you know, the race classification just says entered pits and retired.
Right.
They don't give you any details, which they never do. So that's not unusual. and the announcers didn't pick up on it. You know, I remember telling you, where the hell's Caparossi? Never heard anything about it. It just bike quit. So she had some kind of mechanical issue of another and, DNF. Kind of a bummer. And where does that put us in the World Championship classification? So we still have our familiar pattern of Stoner, Rossi, Pedrosa, 1-2-3. But the point system, the point situation is somewhat changing. We've now got a 21-point difference from Stoner to Rossi. And like we were talking earlier in this call, you know, that's one bad race for Stoner. Or that's four or five good races for Rossi.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a commanding lead in any way, shape, or form. You know, it is a, you know, it's better than a 10-point lead, but it's not a wide safety margin at all.
No, but then you also have to look at the average points that Casey's getting. Both these guys are going to have to be extremely consistent to beat the other, which is what I think makes a great championship, which is why this is the greatest championship yet, you know?
this one's going down to the wire, I predict. Unless something tragic happens, which I really don't hope it doesn't. It's bad enough that we've already lost Elias and Olivier Jacques for the season. But yeah, Stoner's just on fire. I mean, he's still over 20 points a race.
Yep.
You know, with 185 points. You know. Third position, Danny Pedrosa back in at 119 points. So that puts him, 66 points down on Stoner. Now that's starting to be a sizable lead. Fourth, Hopkins. Fifth, Vermeulen.
I would really like to see Hopkins catch and pass Pedrosa, although it's looking more and more difficult now.
Yeah. Trying to looking through their average points and all of that. Pedrosa's been actually no slouch all year long. You know,
if it wasn't for Turkey, he would be way ahead of Hopkins.
Right, exactly. And the thing is it's unusual to see, you know, the factory Honda being the bike where it's like, well, you know, Danny's not doing too bad. You know what right. I mean? So it's kind of weird. But yeah, I'd like to see Hopkins pass him too. I think that'd be really cool. I'd like to see Hopkins get on the damn podium again. Is what I'd like to see.
Yeah.
He had the one in China, and I thought, you know, we're going to start seeing him up there, and we just sort of haven't.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Hopkins is going to do well in Germany next race.
Okay.
Suzuki seems to be a very nimble bike, and I mean, not, in addition to the fact that they've figured out their power plant.
Yeah, I think they do have that. I'll give you that one. And that's the Sachsenring is one of those tracks that's going to kind of demand it with the big old Omega turn and all of that business that they have going on there.
I'm going to say Rossi first, Stoner second, and Hopkins third on that one.
Rossi, Stoner, Hopkins. Okay, I think that's reasonable.
This is not going to be a horsepower race.
It never is at the Sachsenring.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. It's not my favorite track. I think there's other better tracks in Germany that they could go to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like Nürburgring?
Yeah, oh, yeah. It's
one lap.
Nordschleife. But did you know they run a taxi thing around there? I got an email from listener Gordon Inch, who's emailed me quite a bit for, and he told me about a story where him and his girlfriend took a ride rather than, you know, him actually going out there and riding, which... That's always been, I'd love to do that. Cause if you don't know, you can go on the old course of the Nürburgring, the Nordschleife, and, go like hell, which in Germany is not so unusual. They go like hell in a lot of places, but, you see some of these videos on YouTube. If you go to YouTube and you search for Nürburgring, you're going to find, you know, guys have shot camera footage from their bike or from their car or whatever. And some of these are just sick, insane.
They're mind blowing.
Scary as hell. It's like, I'd never do that. You know, I'd love to, but all the other guys out there would scare me to death. But somebody will drive you around. You get in a, you know, BMW M5, like basically the ring taxi, and they drive you around as fast as they can.
In the championship points, we're going through Vermeulen's fifth, which is great to see two Suzukis in the top five.
Yeah, that's true. That's good. And let's see how many we've got.
That's more than Hondas.
Yes, more than Hondas, more than Yamahas, and more than Ducatis, actually.
Yeah, that's true.
But it's still cool to see, you know, out of those top five things, you've got four manufacturers represented.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, the 880 or the 800cc rule shook things up a lot. We got sixth spot, Marco Melandri with 87 points. Seventh spot, Colin Edwards. eighth spot, Alex Barros, doing so well. The Pramac Dantin teams, of course, they want to do better. We want them to do better. But, frankly, Dantin is not a team that we're always accustomed to see in that top third of the championship point standing. So it's pretty cool.
It's great.
Top almost third. Ninth spot, Loris Caparossi. 10th spot, Nikki Hayden. But I think though, I think that if he has come to grips with the bike, that we're at least going to see him turn his season around. It's a hopeless fight that he's not going to win the championship, but he's not even going to be in the top five, but at least, maybe he'll be sixth or something like that. You following mm-hmm. me?
Back and, to the old ways. And in 4 years, he may be champion again.
You never know if he's still got a ride. 11th spot, Alex Hoffman, doing super good. 12th, Tony Elias, who will be rapidly plunging from the lofty heights of 12th because he's going to miss a whole bunch of races. And we do hope to see Tony Elias back again. Those crazy lions make for good racing. Randy Dupinier in 13th spot. Carlos Checa, 14th. Shinya Nakano in 15th spot. Makoto Tomata, 16th. Sylvain Guintoli, 17th. And Ant West, this doesn't really count because he's only had two races, but he's down in 18th. And actually, it's going to be kind of funny because he's going to pass Guintoli and probably Tomata in like no time flat.
Right.
And this guy that barely showed up is doing better. You think about it, Fonsi Nieto, who raced one race, has more points than Kenny Roberts Jr. did. And whatever. So there's our championship standings, more or less. But it's been fun. It's been real. It's always
it's
good
a great
talking
race,
to you.
And I'm looking forward to seeing you at Laguna.
Talk to you later.
See ya. Bye.
Let's talk a little bit about the CBS coverage of Assen. As you know, Assen was on CBS, not Speed. Again, it was the second race this year that CBS covered. And we had such great success with the last commentary and Pepsi Challenge and all that, I decided to do it again. So, watching the CBS coverage, kind of the first thought I had while I was watching it was, where the hell did they get that music? It was awful. The broadcast started off with some really cool shots of Rossi and Hayden and Stoner and Jeff Metters, the announcer, was doing a voiceover sort of explaining what's going on in the season so far. But you got to listen to this music. It sounds like bad porno music. Terrible. So listen to this.
8 rounds gone, and the rivalry intensifies between the famous Italian and the new Aussie kid on the block. The Americans are bouncing back, and the world champion wants results. The cathedral of racing is poised. This is MotoGP.
So after that, I was a little, the first few seconds there of that show did not rock my world from the get-go, but things got a lot better real quick. I really thought that the pre- and post-race features that CBS did were really pretty good. They had some of the usual chit-chat between Schwantz and Metters, and they had interviews with Colin and Nikki before the race, and then they had Kevin Schwantz talking with Rossi and Hayden after the race. And it was, these interviews and the chit-chat and everything was obviously very basic, but I'm not going to fault CBS on that at all because they're trying to attract a larger audience. They're trying to target viewers that don't follow MotoGP at all. And so there's going to be a lot of very basic info and kind of review and that sort of a thing. So that's okay. And that bit at the beginning of the show, of this show, of MotoGP OD, with Nikki Hayden saying, "Nice jacket, Kevin," is from that post-race interview, which was pretty funny. I thought it came out real well, especially since Schwantz's jacket did not seem to fit at all. Because speaking of jackets, about the commentary as a whole, it was almost like they addressed every one of my complaints about their coverage that they did of Catalunya. And Alan Fleming sent me an email saying that, I'm sure that this has made the rounds of CBS by now about the last Pepsi challenge that I did in episode 82. And I was, a little bit of vanity of thinking, oh yeah, that'd be pretty cool if that happened. But, who knows, maybe it did because they really did sort of, or maybe just a lot of people had the same opinions as I, that's much more likely. So they seriously, like I said, they sort of fixed all of the things that I found wrong. They showed a lot more enthusiasm. Jeff Metters didn't tell us that it's a bunch of foreigners and that it's a European series, you know, over and over again. They were even both wearing, like I said, Schwantz had a jacket on. They were both wearing CBS sort of sport coats. It's a, you know, not that I really complain about Schwantz kind of showing up for Catalunya in that ratty old shirt that he looked like he'd been wearing for painting his house the previous week. But I did, you know, think that was a little odd that they weren't wearing, like, you know, at least a polo with a CBS logo or something like that. But Metters kind of went the other way about the international thing. He was sort of concentrating several times throughout the show on how many Americans were in the top six or on the grid or lap chart, that sort of a thing. But that's it's a positive comment, and it was a whole lot better to hear him saying things like that rather than what he said in Catalunya, where he was basically saying that MotoGP is a European series and then they race clockwise over here and all this kind of business. So I thought that was a big, huge improvement, and I did not hear him mention NASCAR one single time, which was fantastic. They get extra points for that one. Now, the comparison of Stoner versus Rossi that they did right at the beginning of the show, talking about the points and standings in the season so far of eight races through the first eight races in each of Stoner and Rossi's second year in the Premier class, I thought that was really neat. And so you had Rossi in 2001 and Stoner 2007, almost mirror images. Each had five wins out of the eight races. Rossi had seven podiums back in 2001, compared to Stoner's six so far this year. Rossi had 161 points. Stoner had 165 so far this year. And both of them had a 26-point lead going into that ninth race. So I thought that was kind of a cool comparison, and I sort of really only wish that I'd thought of it myself to do it first, but that one came out well. And they were, you know, they put a lot of effort into it. Hayden's interview in the pre-race show was pretty good. It was very candid with someone playing what sounded like Pac-Man in the background. I'm not 100% sure, but Hayden mentioned how Honda has admitted that the RC212V was not designed for his riding style at all, and how, you know, that was a little tough for him to swallow, that the main engineer is telling the world champion that the bike just wasn't designed for him. So it was, yeah, that was a good one. Then they had an onboard lap narrated by John Hopkins, which was also really good, excellent stuff, except that they used the onboard video from Hopper's own bike, and the camera on that bike was set up for that famous MotoGP ass cam, which they should have used an onboard from a different bike that had the camera in the front. That ass cam thing that MotoGP always does isn't bad. I mean, you get to see the rider moving around on the bike and whatnot, and it's kind of cool, but I think I'd prefer a frontal shot for a narrated onboard lap, so you have that rider's eye view sort of a thing going on. And it's, you know, it's not like they absolutely had to have Hopkins' bike while Hopkins did the lap, because Guintoli narrated an onboard for MotoGP.com. It wasn't him riding it, and he said at one point in the thing, he says, "I don't know who's riding this bike, but he sure is pushing hard." So, you know, they could have done that with Hopkins, but that's pretty minor stuff. I mean, I'm nitpicking here, splitting hairs. During the pre-race, a little bit later on, Schwantz called the race as Stoner in first place, Rossi second, Hopkins third, and Hayden and Edwards battling for fourth and fifth, which I thought was kind of an interesting call, and I was kind of wondering if he put Hopkins there in third because of the Suzuki connection or what. I mean, not that Hopkins is doing all that bad and everything, but I was just a little curious of his pick for Hopkins for third. One thing I noticed that I thought was really cool was they had a commercial for MotoGP.com a couple of times, and they also had a couple of ads for the USGP at Laguna Seca, which was great, and CBS ran a contest to win tickets for the USGP. So they're attracting some, you know, somewhat different advertisers than Speed gets, which kind of makes sense that MotoGP would try to push their own website and all that on these races and everything, particularly for people that may not always, you know, if they only have CBS, they don't have Speed, then they're going to need to want to watch the races somehow or another. So the MotoGP.com, just kind of cool to see some different advertisers. During the pre-race stuff, Metters did the grid chatter alone. He sort of went down the grid and just kind of covered one guy on each row. He didn't really sort of say, you know, 3, 4, 5 and all that. So it wasn't quite the same as Nick Harris's frantic grid commentary that he does, where he manages to get everybody in there all the time. They had a little bit better of a grip on having somebody always talking all the time, which, you know, I'm not always saying is necessarily a good thing to have somebody talking all the time. Sometimes I like to hear just the motorcycles, but you do want periods. You don't want a lot of dead air going on, especially with CBS. Their volume differences between the sound of the bikes and the sound of the commentators, the bikes are much quieter than it is on Eurosport and MotoGP.com. The MotoGP feed tends to sound almost like they're always outside. So does Eurosport, but the CBS commentary was much, you know, like I said, it's definitely was a lot quieter inside. But at times, even though they might have been constantly talking, at times it almost sounded like they weren't really having a real conversation. They were sort of both saying their own kind of thing. Now it was almost like they may have done the race commentary after the fact and sort of just each doing their own thing. It was kind of bizarre. The enthusiasm level was a little bit hot and cold. Sometimes great, sometimes not so great. For instance, there was just not a whole lot of excitement in the first portion of the race where Hayden was moving up from 11th on the grid on that first lap and just making huge inroads. You know, I mean, you just heard sort of, oh, Hayden passing Edwards, ho-hum. It just didn't sort of seem like there was enough excitement all the time. But portions of it were great, as we're going to hear in a little bit. Now, when Rossi passed Stoner on lap 23 at the chicane, Metters and Twants actually did sound, you know, really excited. It sounded like they're watching the same race that you and I are watching. It was sort of a dry excitement, but it was much, much better than last time. Schwantz then gave us a little color spiel about how Stoner could have been, you know, motoring past Rossi with that extra power of the Ducati and so forth, which, you know, kind of interesting stuff. He's sort of making an effort. And all of this, of course, leads us into da-da-da-da! Back by popular demand, the Pepsi Challenge of commentary. I can't believe that a professional broadcaster of any sort would ever do something where they have a successful show and people get lots of comments and everything, and so they just do it again and again and again and do it to death. But we're going to do the Pepsi Challenge again because it was kind of fun, and I did get a lot of email off of it, and I think you'll enjoy it this time again. I certainly hope so. Each segment that we're doing here is about 45 seconds long. The different versions are really a lot of fun to listen to again. And today's comparison chunk is from, like I said, lap 23, right before Rossi makes his pass on Stoner. So you got the onboard camera from Stoner's bike, and you're looking back at Rossi, and Rossi just comes zooming up, and he's just right there. And the MotoGP guys caught on real fast, and so did the Eurosport guys. And to be fair, Metters and Twants weren't, you know, they were watching the race this time. They were on the ball, and it wasn't sort of like it caught them by surprise. So I'm not going to have to give you an audible cue of when the pass actually happens. I think you'll be able to figure it out. So first, the official MotoGP.com commentary with Nick Harris and Matthew Roberts.
You can see Rossi really on the rear wheel of Casey Stoner. Now, are we going to see another manoeuvre from Valentino Rossi? Is he going to have a go? They head back towards the paddock now, and they go through the ramshack. Now, will he run it a little bit wide to get the line into the chicane? He tries to do that, and he's going to have a go, is he? Valentino Rossi goes through on Casey Stoner, and Rossi's made the manoeuvre.
Rossi in front, three laps to go, he's made the move. Now, what will Stoner do? He's got that superior speed. He'll just hang in there and wait. It's going to be interesting when they come out of De Struben this time round. He's coming up any moment now. They're going to go round this long right hook, and then it's the left coming out, and that's where the power of the Ducati shows. Has Rossi got the power to stay in front of him? There's three laps to go.
Which now we're, you know, always on MotoGP.com, you have a certain level of excitement. I actually had to bring the volume down on that one because it was just so loud, and they're so up front. I mean, it's actually, if you look at the audio waveform, the volume level isn't all that much, but it's just they're so very up front the way they record it. Like I said, definitely very, very excited. So next, let's go into the Eurosport commentary with Toby Moody, Julian Ryder, and Randy Mamola.
Valley's going to try to make a run, but he can't do it. Watch this.
He's sitting up there momentarily, Randy.
Another right-hand corner. Let's see if he can get through this. This is a fast, really hard on the upper body to get it through here. This is the fast left-hander. Let's see if Valley can get a run on it.
Coming into this final chicane, this is what it's going to look like in the dying moments of this race. Does he go through? Rossi, he does! He puts him on, and he goes through. Rossi leads. Now, with, I'm quite surprised that's happening, three laps remaining now that we cross the line. Can Stoner just keep his composure and stay in second place to the last lap? Or has Rossi got the pin lined up and he's going to pull it?
Well, we've seen Stoner Connor not make an error so far. Let's see if Valentino leading this race makes an error or not with the hot red Ducati behind him.
And again, just like last time, Eurosport always is very, very professional. I think they're the hard act to follow, the somewhat what everybody should shoot for as far as MotoGP.com, or excuse me, MotoGP commentary is concerned. And lastly, let's play the CBS commentary and see what you think.
Valentino out wide just a little bit, trying to set Casey up with a bit of a drive there. Can't quite pull the track's just not quite wide enough to get that one done, Doctor.
Well, you can see how quickly he closed the gap on Casey Stoner there on board with Rossi, and that's exactly what Valentino was seeing. And you can see the lean angle on these bikes. It is severe. Got to have the tire grip.
There's
getting
the
to the inside. Valentino Rossi gets around Casey Stoner.
You know, he made that pass almost look easy, but yet, oh, that's so deep in there on the brake to try and pass Casey Stoner. Now, three laps to go. Does Casey have anything to retaliate with?
Huge crowd reaction here from the fans at the Aston Circuit.
Everybody in the grandstand still standing on their feet, waiting to see what happens over the next three laps here to see what the outcome of the Dutch TT is going to be.
So, okay, like I said, I thought it was a huge improvement, a really enormous improvement. I did get a couple of emails, one email that said he'd actually thought they did a worse job than they did at Catalunya, and I had to disagree with that one. I thought they did a much better job. It still has a little bit of that sort of golf announcer kind of feel at times, you know, where you just sort of, he's lining up for the putt, and this is for the birdie, and he's going to have to get this one, you know, and then very quiet clapping in the background, that sort of a thing. It, you know, this is a motorcycle race. You're supposed to be excited. You're not supposed to be wearing a sport coat. You're supposed to be jumping up and down and screaming. So, you know, we do want, obviously, clear and concise commentary without too much screaming, but we want some excitement going on. But they did a whole lot better job than they did at Catalunya, and hopefully they'll continue to improve and do a better job when they do the Sachsenring race in a couple weeks, or next weekend. And part of this is obviously going to be that Metters and Schwantz are still sort of developing their dynamic. They're still getting to know each other and how to play off of each other. And so they'll be even better next week. And their next race is scheduled for 10 a.m. Pacific time on Sunday, July 15th. It's the Sachsenring. So that's going to be the third race of the season that CBS covers. And although, like I said, I've been talking about this one a lot, I think it's really exciting that MotoGP is on network television in the United States. And this is a good thing with a big capital G, because we need to get more people involved and more fans out there. And one of the ways you're going to do that is if you put it on in there, get people to watch it and all of that, it's going to attract a larger audience. And this is just a good thing overall. So we're going to close here real quick with what I think is the kind of music that CBS should have been using the whole time, instead of the cheesy low rent, I don't know what it was, kind of music that they opened the show with. This is what they closed it with, and I thought this was a whole lot better. So there's the music that they ran at their closing. Like I said, I thought it was a whole lot better than the stuff they had at the beginning. Now, if I had to say that CBS's coverage of Catalunya got them a grade of a D, if that, and Eurosport typically probably gets an A or an A+, where MotoGP, the official MotoGP.com feed, gets an A or an A-. Well, if I had to say, give them a grade for CBS's coverage of Assen, I'd give them a C+ or maybe even a B-. I thought they did a whole lot better, and I am looking forward to them doing an even better job at the Sachsenring. That's going to do it for today's show. I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you very much for downloading it. And one thing I did not mention in the introduction was that the email address is bob@motogpod.com. I got a lot of email this past week. I appreciate it. I always enjoy getting email from listeners. So if you want to send something, bob@motogpod.com. I'll try to answer. I always answer my email. If you'd like to send email to all of us, Jules, Jim, and myself, that's motogpod@motogpod.com. And we get all that. Or if you just want to send something to me, it's bob@motogpod.com. Another thing I didn't mention was all these apologies. Apparently, I apologize too much on the show. So I mentioned that a few shows ago, and I sort of apologize for the apologizing. The email continued. It's just gone kind of on and on and on. So now this is it. The last thing, I'm apologizing for the apologies about the apologies. And I think that covers it. That's enough apologizing, right? So now that's it. We're done. No more. And much like that, we're done with this show. So until next week, have a good time out there, ride safe, and if you sent me an email or something and I forgot to read it, well, I apologize. I'll talk to you later. I'd like to apologize to Dorner Sports SL, Eurosport, and CBS and all their affiliates, even though I'm sure that my usage of the samples in this show are more than covered by the fair use section of U.S. copyright law. At least I certainly hope that's the case, because I know that all those companies have a lot more legal muscle than I can ever hope to flex. In any event, despite the fact that I'm just a fanboy loser with all the audio charisma of a talking fish, I do have to say that MotoGP is a trademark of Dorner Sports SL. And the MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorner Sports SL. All other trademarks, including those of CBS and Eurosport, are the property of their respective owners, and MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them. Oh, and don't forget Pepsi. MotoGPOD is not affiliated with Pepsi in any way either.